Welcome to the weekly podcast of Epworth United Methodist Church in Berkeley, California. Reverend Dr. Karen Olivito, Associate Dean at the Pacific School of Religion, spoke on November 11, 2007. Her sermon was titled, Know Your Net Worth. We have a chance to use God's trust fund if we open our hearts. The lectionary reading is Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44.
Someone recently noted, if it's more blessed to give than to receive, I'm okay with letting someone else get the blessing. Sometimes it feels that that's how we in the USA live these days. In fact, George Barna, a pollster, has noted that giving levels as a percentage of one's wealth were highest during the Great Depression than they are now. It's so important that we, in 2007, sink into the lesson of the gospel reading. The story of the widow and her offering, often called the widow's mite, M-I-T-E, is but a few verses long, but its impact has crossed millenniums as Jesus' interpretation of the widow's action continues to be an object lesson for us all. Jesus is observing the actions of those who come to worship, how the wealthy make a great show of their contributions. Through the crowd comes one of the most vulnerable amongst them, a widow. Now, widows in Jesus' culture had no social security or spouse's pension to live on, but instead were subject to harsh treatment. You see, it was a Hebrew belief in Jesus' day that death before old age was a judgment for sin that extended to the surviving wife. It was a disgrace to be a widow. While there were some laws that offered a widow some physical and economic protection, like allowing her to return to her father's house if she was childless, or having her husband's brother marry her, if these options weren't available to her, a widow was one whose meager existence was mainly supported by the generosity of others. So Jesus observes that while the wealthy toss large sums into the offering box, the widow makes her way to that same offering box and drops in two small coins, mites. Now remember, any money that she possessed was probably given to her. And yet, not knowing if she was going to receive any more as a result of someone else's generosity, she empties from her purse what for her is a significant portion of her wealth. Jesus praises the woman's action and holds it up as a model of faithfulness for the rest of us. The story of the widow reminds me of a widow I once knew. Amy Fuller was a member of my very first church in upstate New York. Bloomville was a town of 250 people in the northern foothills of the Catskill Mountains. Most of the folks were dairy farmers. Poverty was so prevalent that some people lived in shacks with no running water or electricity. Amy was 92. And when I met her, I had no way of knowing that hers would be my very first funeral. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Amy was widowed in her 20s and lived her whole life by herself. She had been a teacher and lived on a very meager teacher's pension. And up until the day she died, Amy darned people's socks for a quarter each. Every Sunday, I would hear the clink, clink, clink of quarters as they hit the collection plate. Every Sunday. She was childless, and she had been the organist of the church for 50 years. And when she died, she wanted to make sure that the bulk of her estate went to the church whose ministry she loved. Her house, which was basically her greatest asset, was worth $9,000. That tells you about what kind of community this was. Amy stipulated in her will that $5,000 of her estate was going to go to the church. She wanted the church to have most of it. And then the rest of her estate that was left was going to be given to three nieces, none of whom she really knew. Well, when Amy passed, there was a surprising twist to her last wishes. It seems that as we were going through her things, we found a stack of very brittle, weathered papers. It seems that in 1911, Amy bought shares of stock in a new upstate New York company called the Computer Tabulating Recording Company, now known as IBM. That put her net worth at over $1 million. So every time I hear the story of the widow's mite, I can't help but think of Amy Fuller, who thought that she was giving to God the bulk of her accumulated wealth, yet she knew nothing of her net worth. As a result, she spent most of her life living on the edge of poverty. Every day, her main meal was saltine crackers and government surplus cheese. But in the end, what was thought to be a generous act was greatly diminished. I think of Amy and the widow in this morning's scripture, and I must confess, I am challenged. The story seems so sweet, but packed a powerful punch in my very middle-class midsection. I am confronted with questions of my own understanding of money and its purpose, about how I understand the connection between the resources given me and God, about whether or not I truly know my net worth. Research shows that most of us who live in the U.S. have the financial capacity to increase our giving by billions and billions of dollars without any real change in our standard of living. In fact, on average, an American household with $166,000 of salary and assets of $1.4 million gave approximately $7,558 to charity, but had the potential to donate $21,000 without any change in standard of living. Do we know our net worth? We are the generation who takes careful notice of our portfolios, our retirement funds, and our property values, especially our property values these days. We're proud of our earnings and prouder still of what we can buy with them. But when we calculate carefully the bottom line, do we really know our net worth? The widow in the temple knew that everything that she had was a gift from God. As one of the most vulnerable members of society, she knew about living life on the edge. Yet she felt she was so rich that she could give away a significant portion of what she had in gratitude for all that God had given her. She knew her net worth and lived out of a sense of abundance that doesn't come from great wealth or things, but from a deep and abiding trust in God's goodness. Do you know your net worth? Are you aware that everything that you have isn't yours, but comes to you from God? Are you, as a child of God, able to return to God a portion of what God has entrusted to you in praise and thanks for God's generosity? Are you willing to relinquish your hold on your money in order to spread God's goodness in the world? You know, it comes as no surprise that those of us who call ourselves Methodists talk about money and spirituality. We talk about money because it's in our denominational DNA. John Wesley, as heirs of John Wesley, who was the founder of our faith, we have to talk about money in community. I have to tell you, in the summer of 2006, I had the chance to visit Wesley's chapel. Robin and I were there, and this became Wesley's home base for later years. Visiting his home, I was struck by how simply he lived. Wesley said a lot about how our spiritual commitments ought to be visible through the choices we make in our daily life. Our lives ought to be a visible reflection of our faith. And for Wesley, what we do with our money is a key spiritual question. It was Wesley who said this: earn as much as you can, save as much as you can, invest as much as you can, and give as much as you can. His life was a testament to that belief. In 1731, he began to limit his expenses so that he could give more and more of his money away. So the first year, he earned 30 pounds. He kept his expenses at 28 pounds and gave away 2 pounds. The following year, he earned 60 pounds. He kept his expenses at 28, gave away 32. The following year, he earned 90 pounds. He again kept his expenses at 28, gave away, and here's where my math gets bad, 62. Throughout his lifetime, he kept his expenses at about 28 to 30 pounds and gave away the rest, even when his salary reached as high as 1,400 pounds. He seldom had more than 100 pounds in his possession at any one time. This so baffled the English Tax Commission that in 1776, he was audited. They investigated him because they figured that a man of his income must have had some silver plates that he wasn't paying excise tax on. This is what he wrote to them: I have 2 silver spoons at London and 2 at Bristol. That's all the silver I have at present, and I shall not buy any more while there are so many round me who want bread. When he died in 1791 at the age of 87, the only money in his will were the coins to be found in his pocket and dresser. Most of the 30,000 pounds he'd earned in his life had been given away. And he wrote this: I cannot help leaving my books behind me whenever God calls me. But in every other respect, my hands will be the executor of my will. In other words, I will put control on my spending myself, and I will go beyond the tithe for the sake of Christ and Christ's kingdom. Wesley knew his net worth as a child of God and utilized his money in a way that showed his commitment to God and God's family. Last year, I performed a wedding in New Orleans. Now, I don't know how many of you have been to the Gulf Coast since Katrina, but the devastation continues to be shocking and shameful. I've been down there several times to see family as well as to participate in the rebuilding efforts with members of this church. And I am stunned that every time I go down, the devastated parts of New Orleans look exactly as they had the very first time when I visited. It is clear that New Orleans will be rebuilt not by the government, whether it's federal, state, or local, but it will be rebuilt through the efforts and generosity of faith communities like ours, people who are willing to give of themselves and their money in order to rebuild this great city. Now, life has changed radically for people up and down the Gulf Coast. My sister, who lives there, talks about how in the aftermath of Katrina, everyone pulled what resources they had, no matter whether it was food or water, gasoline or ice, so that no one would be in need. Even in the face of such massive disaster, the New Orleans spirit of community and celebration never wavered. At the wedding, this old guy bent over in cowboy shoes and jeans and a bolo tie, shuffled up to the microphone. Someone whispered to me, "That's Ernie Cosey. He's in the Country Music Hall of Fame." I believe them. As he stood there, holding on to his cowboy hat, he said these words to the wedding guests: "In 2004, I lost my wife. In 2005, I lost everything I have. But here it is, 2006, and I look around this room, and I see how much love there is. We are so very, very rich. We are rich indeed. God has blessed us with so much. He knew his net worth as a beloved child of God. During this season of gratitude, each of us has the opportunity to consider our own net worth as a beloved child of God. We have the chance to reorder our lives like John Wesley reordered his, so that we could give our resources out of a gratitude for how well God cares for us. It is a chance to use God's trust fund, that is all that we've been given, as a way to show our commitment to Jesus and God's family. May each of us have the spirit of the widow living in us as we open our hands, as we open our hearts, and return to God the gifts that God has given us. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you have comments, please send them to epworthberkley@gmail.com. That's epworthberkley@gmail.com. The website of Epworth United Methodist Church is www.epworthberkley.org. That's www.epworthberkley.org.